Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is once again time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, which is a feature where we answer your questions. You can send us questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. And judging from our response, we get many emails, and we sometimes get letters, although that's a dying art. People really enjoy our Q&A with Layla because you never know what subject we're going to tackle. And it's likely that if you listen for 40 minutes or so, you're going to find something relevant to your particular health, nutritional, or medical predicament. So, hello, Layla. How are you?
I'm okay, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
And for those of you who are new initiates, Layla Mutin is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. We work together side by side. She is a registered dietitian, but she's okay. Registered dietitians, to some extent, have earned perhaps not the best reputation because sometimes they're in favor of conventional nutrition, low-fat diets, some of the stuff that's obsolete. But Layla is au courant of all the latest diet trends, and we're on the same page. Right, Layla?
Right, absolutely. And, you know, more and more RDs are coming on board to the dietitians in integrative and functional medicine practice group. So we are growing leaps and bounds. Get ready.
You know, a little history on that is that I was good friends with Sherry Lieberman. Unfortunately, she passed away while quite young. But Sherry was a real pioneer. She was a registered dietitian who, like you, bucked the trends. But in those days, it was almost like a heresy. It was almost like they wanted expel her from the associate, the ADA, the American Dietetics Association, or whatever it's called. And she that ticked her off. And so she brought suit. And she won.
Good for her, yeah.
Because she said, you know, what is this? Is this a religious order, you know, where we're vetted in terms of our religious ideology? I have a differing view about the utility of vitamins and supplements. She also had a more open-minded view about the benefits of fats in the diet at a time where everybody was engaged in fat phobia. And it turns out that history has vindicated her viewpoint. Unfortunately, she hasn't lived to see the widespread adoption of her viewpoint in the very self-same organization that tried to expel her. So there's a big push among mainstream dietitians. It's a great credential. Unfortunately, some mainstream dietitians still are under the sway of obsolete ideas.
That's true. The tide is turning.
The tide is turning. So
as it is in conventional medicine in general, so... The tide is beginning to turn. Yeah.
So before we get to questions in the news this week, and we post many of these things on Facebook, and I'm really pleased to say that we've reached a remarkable milestone on Facebook. We've surpassed 4,000 likes on our Intelligent Medicine website.
Wow.
It's just if you search for Dr. Ronald Hoffman on Facebook, you can find our Intelligent Medicine website, and you can like it. And when you like it, then the things that I post there appear in your stream. And I think it's kind of an informative way to stay abreast of some of the latest nutritional findings, because I try to curate the most important stories, the stories that you need to hear or that you'll find interesting. And so here's an interesting one. Just came up. Antidepressants linked to tooth implant failure. That can't be good. That can't be good. You know, we tend to think, well, antidepressants, you know, maybe mild side effects, but something as fundamental as an inability for a tooth implant to be successful, that is not good. That is not good.
There has been shown in the past some association between antidepressants and bone mineralization.
Exactly. They say, they say that there's some issues with antidepressants of the, and I'm trying to see which ones they're talking about, specifically, but...
SSRIs or SNRIs?
Yes,
or
SSRIs, but what they...
MAO,
Yeah, it says more than 1 in 10 Americans over the age of 12 use antidepressants, and the rate is increasing. So there's a concern. Also, they mentioned that some research suggests that antidepressants may promote bone loss or interfere with bone development. So, okay, I mean, I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, there's a place for antidepressants, but they're too often prescribed quite casually. And I see here also, and I posted it in our stream on Facebook, that the New York Times belatedly has discovered intermittent fasting. They write an article. Lo and behold, you know, how many years have we been talking about that? You know, 5 years.
Yeah.
Intermittent fasting. Fasting diets are gaining acceptance. The health benefits of skipping meals are growing more apparent. So, better late than never to the party. But we've discussed the issue of IF, intermittent fasting, 5-2 diet, going a little longer between your last meal at night and your first meal in the morning, and or adopting what's called the 5-2 plan, which is 500 calories 2 days a week, seems to reboot the immune system, seems to have a good effect on lipids, helps with insulin resistance, many benefits. It may be anti-aging in a, per se. It may have direct effects on telomere expression, enabling you to live longer.
Right. Right. The repair mechanisms in the body go into a bit of full force when there's calorie restriction.
Exactly.
That way, the sirtuins.
Right. And calorie restriction, where you go, 7 days a week, you're eating like, 1,200 calories. That's just for the most ardent.
The way to go.
Yeah. There is actually a CR society, a calorie restriction society.
Yeah.
And they have like parties where, they pass around like celery sticks and,
radishes,
a plate of sprouts.
No dip.
And, it's a grim, group of individuals, it seems to me. There's not a lot of, joie de vivre among them, but they will.
Well, how can there be any? They're not joyful at all if they're always hungry.
Exactly. But they may.
And with calorie restriction, here's the thing. They're minimizing the amount of fat in the diet because fats have so many calories.
Right.
Therefore, they're losing not just the calories, but the thing that might provide the most satiety.
Right.
They are without that. Yeah, I wouldn't be joyful either.
Okay, so we don't really advocate that extreme expression of that, but if you want to get in on the IF trend, hey, now the New York Times is behind it, so you could be one of the cool kids.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to questions. What have we for this week?
We've got an email from Lori. I was wondering if there's any more weighing in on the validity of the macrobiotic approach, a subject you touch on in the juicing article. To date, it's been the approach I've most resonated with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if there are any major blind spots in your opinion on the macrobiotic approach.
Okay. Well, having really explored that approach for quite a long time, in the early part of my career, and even before, when I was pre-med and in med school, and to some extent the beginning of my medical career, for a span of, maybe 15 years or so, I was macrobiotic, which means I was on a vegan diet that was rich in soy. The main sources of protein were beans, tofu, tempeh. I didn't eat any fish, but we were allowed some bonito flakes to flavor our soups and our sauces, and lots and lots of brown rice, lots and lots of whole grains, plenty of vegetables, and not much else. They even frowned on raw fruit in the more pure expression of that diet. So what benefit did it have for me? Well, I went from a standard American diet while I was in college, and probably not the most healthy lifestyle, to a macrobiotic diet, and I think it cleaned me out, it leaned me down, I detoxified on it, but I ultimately ended up in trouble because I was missing something. My skin became dry and itchy, and ultimately, I'll mention this because I just recorded a video tribute to the late Dr. Nick Gonzalez. We may make that tribute available a little later this year after his memorial service. But in that video tribute, I actually credit Dr. Gonzalez with advising me to modify my diet. I really didn't know what to do. I was having tremendous skin itching. I was baffled. I wasn't sure what was causing the problem. and he urged me to include more animal protein and fat in my diet. And I remember what he said to me. He said, "You need to put some meat in your diet." And I said, "Well, I don't know. I haven't had meat in 17 years." And he said, "No, you." Mm. He said, "You'll be fine." I said, "Well, okay, maybe I could do it a couple of times a week." He said, "No, you need to do it a couple of times a day."
And
I
wow.
said, "Well, what shall I have for breakfast?"
That was radical for then.
I said, "Well, what should I have for breakfast?" And yeah, that's a challenging meal. He said, "Well, have a minute steak or have a lamb chop." He said, "Don't worry, you'll be fine." And the rest is history. Within 6 weeks to a couple of months, my problems were behind me, and I never looked back. I don't have like that kind of super rich breakfast, but I needed to really ramp up my animal protein and fat intake to turn things around. And it worked for me metabolically. So why don't you tackle that issue from the standpoint of your expertise as a nutritionist? What could this person be missing if they're not following a prudent macro diet? What could be some problems?
I'm always worried about a vegan type of diet, even though the amino acids in soy are complete. That's good. That's good news. And of course, the combining of, say, brown rice and beans and having more complementary proteins and so forth, this is all good. So they're getting ample lysine, methionine, some of that. There is the concept of the limiting amino acid in biochemistry, however, where plant proteins may not measure up to animal proteins. Mm-hmm. This is still controversial. I think it's always going to be controversial, and depending on who you ask, you may get a different answer. However, the vegan diet is going to be low in certain nutrients like iron,
yes,
probably B12, because it comes in animal sources. These folks may also become deficient in CoQ10 or have lower serum CoQ10.
Mm-hmm.
Carnitine, you're not going to get a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
And possibly vitamin A to some degree.
Right.
Although the beta-carotene will still convert. They're
going to
be low in their
essential
fatty acids.
Zinc is a little problematic because while there are vegetable sources of zinc, the preponderance of grains may bind some of the zinc, and so you can get trace mineral deficiencies if you're eating a predominantly whole grain diet.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of phytic acid that binds to minerals.
Zinc as well as calcium.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to think about that as well. So, I mean, look, you went from a standard American diet, and I dare say, in college, the standard American diet is even worse than the standard American diet.
You know, my standard American diet was, you know, I would go to, there was something in New York, it was a phenomenon, the $1.79 steakhouse. Tad's Steakhouse.
Oh,
I don't know if you're old enough to remember
Tad's
that.
Steakhouse.
Yeah, Tad's
Steakhouse. My father used to eat lunch at Tad's Steakhouse.
Exactly. So this is biggest bargain for college students. You know, we would go to Tad's Steakhouse for $1.79. You get a steak and a baked potato and, you know, a salad, which we probably didn't eat. And, or we would just get, you know, a giant pizza and devour that. Or maybe a sub because there was a, you know, so that was kind of my college diet. And I don't think I was eating terribly.
That's pretty good for a college standard American diet because that's basically pizza, French fries, and bagels and soda.
Right.
Hmm. Yeah. No, what I was saying is going from something, a diet like that, to a macrobiotic diet is, of course, way healthier.
Sure, yeah.
And it would be a wonderful cleanse as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So the other thing I'll comment on is my experience with the macrobiotic diet is, you know, I used to administer it to patients, to help patients, and many patients really benefited from it in terms of cardiovascular. If they really adhere to the macrobiotic diet and don't cheat, it's pretty good for getting your cholesterol down, for getting your weight down, if you don't have too many starches.
It's kind of like the Ornish or the Pritikin diet. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it's really, so for weight loss, for diabetes, if you don't cheat a lot or don't have too much in the way of grains because, you know, sometimes the macrobiotic treats creep in there and, you know, you have a lot of, you know, too many, you know, it sort of kind of sounds like an oxymoron, but macrobiotic candies and sweets and, you know, people tend to crave stuff and they go for that stuff in the health food store, the chips and the stuff like that. But in its pure form, also I remember some cases where men with prostate cancer that was metastatic to the bone. It showed up in x-rays, went on a macrobiotic diet. And that macrobiotic diet caused a reversal in their improvement. You know, not it didn't just slow the progression; it actually caused them to have a decline in their bone metastases, a lowering of their PSA.
Yeah.
So for certain cancers, very beneficial. I'll point out that the wife of the founder of macrobiotics, or actually not just the founder, but one of the main guys in macrobiotics, Michio Kushi, Avelyn Kushi, unfortunately passed away from ovarian cancer. So it's not a panacea for cancer. I would see some patients with the macrobiotic diet who had really bad fibroids. I was wondering why. I thought, you know, you're starving the body in a sense. Why should fibroids grow? But, you know, all that soy is very estrogenic. And it could be that the fibroids were fed by the estrogenic component in soy. So I think soy is a controversial thing, and it's the preponderant source of protein in the macrobiotic diet.
Yeah. I wonder then if the phytoestrogens in the setting of prostate cancer were helpful.
Helpful, yes.
Quashing the testosterone.
Yes. There's no question
testosterone, you know, aromatase inhibitors or testosterone quashers
Well, men in the old days, men were given synthetic estrogen, very powerful synthetic estrogen, which gave them terrible side effects, and they had really breast development, but it really knocked out the prostate cancer. It was hormonal antagonist to the prostate cancer. So I think different strokes for different folks. There's the science of nutrigenomics, which tries to match people to their genetic predispositions dietarily. I think it's half-baked. I don't think it's ready for prime time. I read an article on it recently saying that planning a diet based on genetic information is a little bit like casting a horoscope. You know, it gives you coherence, but it's not based on true established science.
Some of it is weak in its scientific rigor, yeah.
Right.
Some of it can be weak in its scientific rigor. And this is a promising field.
We may, in 5 or 10 or 25 years, really have a good idea of how to match people to the right diet. We've tried with a blood type diet. I think that was a major overreach.
Debunked.
It's been debunked, but some people, you know, grabbed the ring and felt good with it. Why? Because most people are type O's, and if you stop eating wheat and dairy and eat a higher protein diet, a lot of people are going to feel better. So they're going to say, man, it really worked for me. But, you know, that may be just a coincidence.
That could be coincidence. And it's also the power of suggestion.
Yeah, or you're adhering to a program.
The book is fascinating.
Sure.
It's a beautiful history in discussing how the blood types evolved and so forth and so on, and very good cases and so forth, but the science isn't quite there for all of that. I think so much of it is suggestion, too. And if I may share.
Yes.
I have a rare blood type, AB positive.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And I can't eat for AB positive without consequences.
Wait, isn't AB Jesus' blood type? I think
Who knows?
No, seriously. That was supposed to be.
I don't know.
You know, it's like you're really special if you're AB. So AB positive means that you have trouble getting blood transfusions?
I'm the enigma.
Oh, okay.
I should be a blood donor all over the place because it's rare.
I see.
I would be doing, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But
right, because O's are universal donors, but they're not universal recipients. So they can only get type O or whatever. I'm not sure. Whatever.
Right. O can give blood to everybody.
Right. Because it's minus everything bad. Okay.
Right.
All right.
So, Lori, thank you for this very thoughtful question about macrobiotics.
Yeah, and best of luck to you. We don't want to discourage you, but, you know, here one of the things that I suggest is if you're following a macrobiotic diet, and we frequently do this, people come in and they say, well, how am I doing? I want a report card. You know, just evaluate me. We might check you for essential fatty acids because you're not having fish. You might get the essential fatty acid from nuts, but if you don't efficiently convert, you could have probably we could check you for B12. We could check you for other things and make sure that you're nutritionally optimal. And perhaps, although in macrobiotics, in true macrobiotics, they don't believe in supplements. I think there's a place for supplements in people who want to follow a restricted diet.
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Especially a vegan diet like macrobiotic. Yeah. Okay. We've got an email from Sally. Dr. Hoffman, for a few years now, I've been getting bruising whenever I bump into or bang my arms into anything. The red spots stay for a long time. I don't take any blood thinners,
Right.
Because I was told that you could, that can happen with blood thinners. However, I do take Ecotrin.
And then
I stopped taking it for a few weeks.
And that's a blood thinner. That's a blood thinner.
And that's a blood thinner, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was only off it for a few weeks, but my doctor told me to go back on.
Yeah.
So, is there anything else I could... Wow, maybe she needs to take the Ecotrin three times a week as opposed to every day.
Well, here's the thing. You know, this is... in the past, it was said, oh, you know, everybody over the age of 50 should take baby aspirin because it's so beneficial.
Yeah.
But what we've now discovered is that a couple things. One is that people vary in their response to aspirin. Some people are aspirin responders. They respond with real blood thinning with even tiny amounts of aspirin. Other people are very refractory to the effects of aspirin. To get the blood thinning effect, they have to take more. And so that actually is something that we're beginning to be able to study from a genetic standpoint. You can take a saliva sample or a cheek swab, and you can determine if someone is a vigorous aspirin responder or a weak aspirin responder, and then you can dose the aspirin accordingly. Now, then the other question is it really appropriate for this person to be on aspirin? Sometimes doctors say, well, you know, you're old, so you need to be on aspirin. But maybe the disadvantages outweigh the benefits. This is actually the conclusion of recent big evaluation of aspirin, is that not everybody over a certain age should take aspirin. We should selectively apply aspirin. People who have risks, perhaps they've had a stroke, perhaps they've had a blood clot. These are people who probably really need to take aspirin, or perhaps people who are at high risk for a heart attack. You know, they have plaque, they're at risk. So take an aspirin preventively to prevent the platelets from sticking together, which could form a blood clot in your heart or your brain. Okay, I get it. That does make sense. So the other thing, you know this too, Layla, is there are a few nutritional concomitants to easy bruisability. One is vitamin C deficiency, and sometimes giving more vitamin C, especially with bioflavonoids, can be beneficial. Rutin seems to also help to seal
helps
the blood the vessels
a little
bit.
The blood vessels. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, capillary integrity, etc. Or, you know, you want a fancier version of that, to pycnogenol or perhaps grapeseed, that could do it. The other nutrient, and I think you know this nutrient, that is very much associated with coagulation is vitamin
K.
No. There you go. Yeah.
Vitamin K.
K for coagulation. It's the German spelling of coagulation. So why should that happen in someone? Well, as you get older, sometimes your population of beneficial bacteria in your gastrointestinal tract declines, especially if you take antibiotics. And vitamin K is actually synthesized in the gastrointestinal tract. Or if you don't eat enough fresh fruits and vegetables, which are a source, or if you don't have enough fermented foods like natto, which is fermented soy, or aged cheese, that's a source of vitamin K2. These are some ways you could be deficient in vitamin K. And then, you know, we don't even know what this person's fish oil consumption is, because some people are very sensitive to the effects of fish oil. There's a genetic issue. It's called von Willebrand syndrome, which is actually more common in Eastern European Jews, like a lot of medical conditions. And that results in a greater likelihood of bleeding if you take fish oil or aspirin. So, you know, a hematologist could do some tests and find out if this person has a propensity to bleeding. Or, you know, an integrative physician who knows their stuff could also do it. You know, the whole question is the aspirin really imperative? Oh, the other thing I'll point out is that as folks age, their skin thins. And, you know, you see these older people sometimes and they have really tissue paper skin with a lot of, they're very fragile, very susceptible to bruising. And some of that's due to the blood thinners they take, but some of it's just due to the fact that the skin thins, particularly in women.
Mm-hmm.
And although it can happen in men, but you know, men are thicker skinned than women. For real, not just a metaphor. It's
for real.
It's for real. It has to do with androgens, because androgens thicken the skin. And so, you know, possibly DHEA could be applied to this situation if it were very low, and it might actually strengthen the integrity of the skin. So this is some considerations.
Yeah. High cortisol levels are also very skin thinning.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
You know, a lifetime of high cortisol can also thin the skin.
Well, We know that prednisone literally causes bruising. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. So cortisol mimics the effects of prednisone. Could be part of the problem. All right. This is a good time at which to pause, because we generally divide our podcast into two parts. And I know that our listeners are anxious to hear what's coming up in part two, so give us a preview.
How can I get my heart rate up while I'm exercising?
Oh, okay, that's an interesting one. Mm. We'll tackle that question in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'll remind you, radioprogram@AOL.com is the email address where you can send your questions, and we'll put them in queue for tackling them on a future edition of Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Stay tuned for part two. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.